We're going to continue in English now with our next speaker, Mr. Roman Rosfeld. Mr. Rosfeld is a researcher at the University of Bern. He has coordinated several projects in connection with Switzerland and the First World War, and he has published with a special focus on economic history during the First World War. The title of his presentation is A Blessing of a Good Deed, Munitions Exports by the Swiss Watch Metal and Engineering Industries in the First World War.
Yes, thank you very much for the nice introduction, and I'm sorry for speaking English here in Geneva, but I'm sure that my French would be worse, so it's better to speak English, I believe. And the PowerPoint, you can see the main points of my presentation. At the end of May 1915, in a speech held at Party Colleagues in Chur, Swiss Federal Councillor Felix Gallander praised the nation's humanitarian efforts and their impact with the words, "Willingly and resolutely, our authorities and all circles of our people have helped to alleviate in all ways possible the great suffering endured by so many nationals of the countries engaged in war. This selfless activity not only enhances our international standing, it also brings the people of Switzerland closer together. These are the blessings of a good deed." What Gallander fails to mention is that only weeks before, in March 1915, the Swiss Federal Council had changed its politics regarding the export of munitions, and after an initial ban, began increasingly permitting the supply of munitions components. In the following years, very little information regarding Swiss munition exports was made public. The country's humanitarian work was extensively covered. Information about munition exports in contemporary reports and on the other hand, is difficult to find. A silence that continued for decades in Swiss historiography. This presentation aims to show what the scope of these exports was during the war, how they were reconciled with Swiss neutrality, and which arguments were used over the course of the war to justify or criticize these exports. So my first point. When the First World War started in August 1914, very few people realized that within the space of only a few months, it would grow to become a highly technologized production and attrition battle of an unknown scale. The key to survival in these battles of materials was the tight control, availability, and optimum exploitation of economic resources. And this became one of the main tasks of warfare. In the nations at war, munitions became a key raw material with vast quantities needed to engage in battle. This demand was met by expanding the domestic munitions industry or by importing munitions from neutral countries and were not actively engaged in war. Under international law, private sector companies were permitted to supply munitions. The 1907 Hague Convention had prohibited supplies of munitions by state-owned entities in neutral countries, but according to liberal free market reasoning, a neutral state was not obligated to prevent the export or transit of weapons, munitions, and anything that could be useful for any arm or a navy. Private companies faced no such bans, and were at liberty to choose to whom and what quantities of munitions they wanted to export. Against this background, it was unsurprising that very soon after the start of the war, foreign states and munitions enterprises started placing substantial orders with Swiss companies. In September 1915, the political department wrote that large quantities of munition components manufactured in Switzerland were being exported. without objection to the various states, and that for practical reasons, the export of grass products to Germany were not declared as munitions in order to evade the export ban. Munitions were produced not only by large, long-established companies, such as Zenit in Lörrochle, Vicar Dicte in Geneva, the Schweizerische Metallwerk in Dornach, or Tavan Batschko in Tavan, but also in smaller businesses all over the country who had modified their production portfolio to meet the needs of warfare. The export trade in munitions was not originally initiated by demand from the German, French or British governments, but by Swiss companies, which from the end of 1914 had approached the representations of these nations in Bern with offers. As from spring 1915, the British and French governments started tightly coordinating and controlling the deliveries from Swiss companies. Prior to this, the men responsible for passing on orders to the many small watchmaking companies was the Swiss munition king Jules Bloch from La Jotvaux, whose career helps to illustrate clearly the dimensions of munition exports. Here you can see Jules Bloch. He's the most important man in this munition business in the First World War. From La Jotvaux, he's living in Geneva after the war. After the start of the war, Bloch first worked as an agent for the French arms company Schneider in Le Creusot. This is a French company. And in 1915, together with his brother George Bloch and other business partners, founded the Société Suisse de Décolletage SA. In 1916, with his brothers Edgar and George, he used the share capital increase to acquire Charles Leon Schmid SA and subsequently took over as manager. In 1917, the two companies merged. The production facilities were modernized with a substantial investment, and Charles Leon Schmid SA became modernized, became one of the centres neuralgiques of Swiss munitions production in the First World War. In 1917, the Entente provided 1,350 tons of brass every month to make munitions, of which one third was delivered to Jules Bloch in La Jotvaux. Over the course of the war, Bloch acquired a multi-million fortune. After the war, in a sensational court case, he was convicted of bribing public officials and tax evasion of war profits by the Federal Criminal Court in Lausanne, and sentenced to 8 months of in prison and fined 10,000 Swiss francs. Here you can see also an image from the production of ammunition at Jules Bloch in La Jotvaux. A brief look at the export figures shows very clearly that munition supplies were a major business that was highly relevant for the combatant nations. At the Paris Economic Conference in June 1916, trade sanctions were tightened by the Allied powers. The following year, 1917, stands out on account of its record-breaking figures. In 1916, munitions worth 210 million Swiss francs were exported. A year later, this had risen to 300 million Swiss francs. January 1917 alone, companies in Western Switzerland received orders for around 18 million. Received orders for around 18 million detonators. At this time, Picard Big Day in Geneva was delivering 200,000 detonators weekly to England. Zenit in Le Locle and HGNO in Jutland were supplying 50,000. And many other smaller businesses were shipping thousands of detonators every week to the onboard powers. Over the course of the war, the combined nominal value of these exports amounted to around 850 million Swiss francs. Only for munition, it's only for munition. 850 million Swiss francs. And you have a lot of other raw material. I'm speaking only about ammunition. In reference to the watch industry, the Swiss historian Christine Gagné-Bendiagon speaks of a veritable fièvre des affaires durant la guerre. The production of munitions led to a doubling of their production volume in February 1917, referencing the number of people employed in the watch metal and machinery industry. The Federal Council stated previously at least 30,000 Swiss workers were employed in making munitions. Now, this figure has risen even further. Based on these figures, it can be estimated that in 1917, around a third of the entire Swiss watch metal and machinery industry was employed in making munitions and munition components.
So here you can see now a picture from Picard Big Day in Geneva. Also producing munition.
If one looks at the distribution of the exports to the individual countries, then according to an estimate to the Army War Commissioner, as early as summer 1915, most of the munition presently manufactured in Switzerland are being exported to France. And in the Western Swiss watch industry, the one-sided exports were a clear expression to the support of the Entente powers. In November 1917, in Geneva, the US consul Louis D. Haskell could name only one company that was producing munitions for the Central Powers. Only one producing for the Central Powers in the western part of Switzerland. In a letter to the US Secretary of State concerning the production of munitions in the canton of Geneva, he stated, "I am reliably informed that contracts for the Central Powers have been refused by certain manufacturers. A Section 4 man in one of the factories told me that 600 out of 800 employees at his factory would walk out if that factory manufactured for the Central Powers." As early as October 1915, the political department, in a strictly confidential letter addressed to the Swiss ambassador in Vienna, had written that the supplies of munitions had in recent times shifted noticeably in favor of the Entente. The department did not attribute this development to the support for the different nations at war or the unequal treatment of the adversaries, but instead to the blockade policies of the Entente and the Central Powers' lack of certain raw materials. Accordingly, from the Swiss point of view, they had not violated the country's neutrality through one-sided exports.
So here, another picture, also from Picard the engineer.
Okay. The criticism voiced by the combatant nations was not aimed at the export of munitions as something that all parties needed, but instead at one-sided supplies. to the opponent. So to make that clear, everybody wanted to buy this munition because they needed it, but they didn't want that the enemy did also buy the munition. So that's the point. The neutral states were not universally respected, as they were widely considered as the hyenas of the economic war. In trade negotiations, both sides started using increasingly tough controls to prevent supplies of munitions to the enemy. In autumn 1915, there were already calls from Germany and Austria to boycott Zenit in Lölöckel, one of the largest Swiss watchmakers in the First World War. In February 1916, the Schweizerische Uhrmacher Zeitung reported on numerous of attempted attacks on suspect watch factories in Neuenburg, Jura, which were the result of deliberate propaganda. At the beginning of April 1916, eight professional associations in the German watch trade proclaimed a blockade of 15 Swiss watch factories. Very soon, further measures to combat one-sided munition supplies to the enemy were introduced. However, despite the increasing pressure from both sides, the volume of exports continued to rise in 1917. Criticism from within Switzerland against the rising volumes of munition exports had started in 1915, but became increasingly vocal from 1917 on. From the business side, criticism was leveled at the structural changes triggered by munition exports, wage increases, and the increasing fluctuation of workers to this industry. In the short term, big profits could be made with the production of munitions and numerous jobs created. But in the long term, the investment which were required were not sustainable. At the end of 1920, after an excessive urge to expand that bordered on megalomania during the war years, the Geneva machinery factory Picard Pictet declared bankruptcy, largely because the company failed to readapt to its pre-war business after 1918. Zenit slid into a serious crisis at the beginning of the 1920s, which consumed all the financial reserves it had built up during the war. In March 1918, the Schweizerische Arbeitgeberzeitung reported that the wage payments in the machine factories in 1917 in Geneva alone had totaled around 25 million Swiss francs, and that public houses, cinemas, and other places of entertainment and leisure had never experienced such a boom as in the past year in Geneva. However, measures to counter the increasingly difficult economic and social conditions were taken too late. At the conference in October 1917, Swiss Federal Councillor Schultes agreed with leading representatives of the key industries to reduce munition production by subordinating it under the New Factory Act, and to use federal directive and powers to return workers reforced to their originally production employment. From 1st December 1917, night shifts were prohibited in munition factories, which resulted in a large number of workers losing their jobs in 1918. Outside the companies, criticism of munition exports only 1917, when deliveries were at their peak. Obviously angry at Swiss double standards, the clergyman, officer and later diplomat Hans Zurlinden said in April 1917, "We boast of prisoner exchanges, of taking the severely wounded back home, of the prisoner mail service, and secretly view all these things as moral compensation, because we have nothing else." We cry about our noble care for all those involved in battle, and yet what we mainly do is supply ammunition. The munition exports were also criticized by the Flemish painter Franz Masereel, who fled to Geneva at the end of 1915, and by the Western Swiss satirical magazine Lauberland, which in December 1917, under heading De Munition, published several caricatures and a satirical lettrier pour le fabricant de munitions. I can show you here this. I'm sorry. Yes, this is from Lauberland. In autumn 1917, the International Committee of the Red Cross received the only Nobel Peace Prize awarded during the war. But Geneva was not only the headquarter of the ICRC alongside La Chaux-de-Fonds, it was also the most important Swiss munition production center during the war. While at the IEPG, around 1,000 people looked after prisoners of war, according to the US-American consul in Geneva, Louis Lee Haskell, in November 1917, there were around 10,000 people employed to make munition in the canton of Geneva alone. Gian Pictet, the brother of the most important munitions producer in Geneva, and company founder Lucien Pictet, became a member of the ICRC in 1919. Jean Pictet, the son of Lucien Pictet, later became a professor for international human rights at the University of Geneva and rose to the position of a vice president of the ICRC. Unfortunately, it is not known whether Gian Pictet was the only Swiss munition manufacturer to have such close ties to the ICRC. It is also unclear to what extent the ICRC was aware of the dimensions of Swiss munition production and whether it had any opinion concerning these supplies. It's also from our land. And you see this double standard which is criticized. So I come to the conclusion. At the end of November 1917, Federal Councillor Felix Gallonder held a speech at the party conference of the Freising Demokratische Partei in Bern, where he stated, "The furious battle continues to wage. Streams of blood and tears continue to flow. In light of this inconceivable misery, Switzerland can do nothing better and more fitting to proclaim its international solidarity than to continue its aid work and all other activities to help the people so horribly affected by war." Gallonder was referring to Switzerland's humanitarian work, which was emphasized time and time again during the war. Absolutely no mention was made of the fact that munition exports from Switzerland were at their highest level by this point, same time and he had his speech. In terms of international law, the export of munitions was perfectly legal, but if neutrality is defined as the option against war and politically superior position, which during the war was closely tied to the country's humanitarian efforts, then it was becoming increasingly difficult to justify these exports. As early as the 1960s, in his History of Swiss Neutrality, Edgar Bonjour pointed out that through the option of supplying foreign armies, Switzerland had gained an effective trade weapon, which was also important for providing the country with food and commodities. If the countries wanted to receive Swiss exports, it was not enough to supply Switzerland with raw materials. They also had to provide all the necessities of life. At the same time, the one-sidedness of the supplies was a reflection of the economic balance of power between the adversaries. Due to the Allied blockade, Germany was soon no longer able to supply the necessary raw materials. And when the United States joined the war, the pressure of Switzerland was further increased. It would be slightly cynical to describe the war years as a value creation chain. From the export of munitions to the supply of bandages and dressings to internment and care of wounded soldiers. Despite the routine criticism of this contradictory behavior, Switzerland continues to export munitions on a large scale and constantly emphasizes the nation's humanitarian tradition and its role in international peacekeeping. What both aspects have in common is that they are internationally praised. Or, as Friedrich Dürrenmatt said in the 1980s, in a surgically precise analysis of Swiss history, the ideals of the country has always been practical in nature. One lived deliberately in a manner that made it more beneficial for any potential enemy to leave one in peace. An immoral attitude, but a healthy one, which did not display great spirit, but considerable political acumen. Auf Deutsch ist das ein wunderbares Zitat. Ich habe es leider nicht in deutscher Sprache ziemlich böse. Not only the country engaged in the war profit, engaged in the war profited from Switzerland, from Swiss munition exports, so did Swiss foreign trade policy, and numerous companies, many of whom made profits, big profits, exporting the materials of war. In contrast, these exports directly harmed countless soldiers who were wounded or lost their lives in the battlefields of